John, right?
I was an alumni of Los Alamos, so I only went there for 2 years. And in 1939, Los Alamos disappeared because a fellow by the name of Oppenheimer had a cabin up the road. He suggested to the Secretary of War, a fellow by the name of Henry Stinson, that they take over Los Alamos and develop the atom bomb at that location. I've been back to Los Alamos since, seen some of the pictures. Hold on one second. Hold this one second. Show you one of the pictures.
This is a prep school, right?
That's me.
Wouldn't have recognized you.
Spent 2 years at Los Alamos.
What affected that have on you being away from your family?
Came out to visit me once, which I thought was pretty nice, particularly since I stayed out there the summer in between the two schools.
Because you wanted to, you liked it? Were you happy?
Oh, I loved it.
Did you?
They had a marvelous summer camp, camping back in the mountains. I guess from 10 to 14,000 foot high. Mm-hmm. It's great.
And did you, your asthma or so on, did that disappear?
No, but it improved considerably. I got stronger and was able to outgrow it somewhat. Just a second. You find out what it was?
Yeah. 285 is a supply and small price.
285. Let me talk to my wife about that.
In the meantime, just call us and let us know. And in the meantime, I'll track down that other
one. You would say then that your experience as a young fellow going to prep school was a good experience?
Absolutely. I was like any other teenager. I was shocked when my parents came out to see me. I was sort of embarrassed, but they.
You mean because they were showing?
I found out
too much interest in you, or
no, it's usual thing when you establish yourself in a school with classmates and so forth. You don't know how your parents are going to be accepted. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, my father was a great baseball player, Where were we?
You were saying that your parents came out. Was this a school which, were you the only Jewish boy?
There were two there, I think. It was very interesting. Marvel School was up on the mesa, winding road up to it. My dad came with a friend by the name of Sam Jacobson, who used to make Excello shirts. Jason Church. And Sam Jacobson was a little fella who had a French accent when he wanted to. We used to call him Z Count. Anyway, he got up on this windy road, got up to this school, and even though he worked on the 15th floor of a building in New York, he was terrified of the height. Mm-hmm. Or the windy road. Very few people had been lost on it, but He was terrified. So they, before they got him down the road, they gave him four or five martinis, and he went down very peacefully.
It was it one of those narrow roads with no...
It's no still there, except it was one of those that had hairpin turns in it, and it was just cut into the side of a mesa. As a matter of fact, that's why Los Alamos was chosen, because there was no access to the particular mesa.
At that point, did you have a car? Were you spinning around those roads? Or
no, I was 13 years old.
Oh, just 13.
But I think that's the reason why Oppenheimer knew of this.
Oh. Use a wash.
You said a magic number. I was 13 when you were at school in Los Alamos. Did you have a bar mitzvah? Were you?
I had absolutely no Jewish education. When I returned to Pittsburgh to go to Shadyside, in the last 3 years of my high school education, Rabbi Freehoff offered to take me in as a graduating class on a personal basis. At the time, was not inclined to do so. It's unfortunate that I had no formal Jewish education.
Well, would that be because your family was not particularly religious?
That was because I wasn't around.
At the same time,
I think my brother was away at school in his last 2 or 3 years, and I don't think that he went to was confirmed either.
Confirmed, but
at Rota Shulam.
Yeah, but what? But at Rota Shulam at that time, boys were not bar mitzvahed.
That's correct.
There was no
girls weren't
bas mitzvahed. Speaking of your early home life,
I really don't remember whether my sister and brother. I know that I didn't go to religious school.
What at that time were your parents members of the temple? Were they?
They certainly were.
They
were supporters of the temple and members of the temple. Not particularly religious, because the Jews in those days were somewhat assimilated.
They always talk about that period of dichotomy in the Jewish community between the German Jews who had come earlier and the ones who came later. Were you aware of this? As a boy?
Well, not really, but I was aware of a negative attitude towards beards and yarmulkes and so forth. These things have changed over the years.
Is that a good thing, do you think?
What?
The change of attitude, more tolerant?
I've always believed in things that unite the Jewish community. So I try and be tolerant of all elements of that community. That's why I'm interested in the Jewish community centers and the Federation. And I think we've made great strides in Pittsburgh in accepting each other.
When you were growing up, living in Fox Chapel and so on, were you aware of or ever tainted by anti-Semitism? Was that something that you had to deal with?
Well, I had to deal with it the whole way through prep school out west. There was a lot of anti-Semitism at Los Alamos, and I was certainly aware of it at Shadyside. and on to college, where I was not accepted in any fraternity and was part of the Garfield Club, which was an allocation of a third of the students at college.
And what college was that?
That was at Williams College, mm-hmm. in Williamstown, Massachusetts.
How did you happen to select that college?
Well, that's a long story.
I like long stories.
You do?
Yes.
Well, I really didn't do very well in my college boards because I had a girlfriend at Carnegie Tech. And I also was the editor of the Shady Side Academia. Pardon me, the business manager. Mm-hmm. And instead of selling 10 pages of advertising, I sold 62. And that kept me away from school a lot. Both of those activities. So I didn't do very well on my college boards. And that summer I went to Europe, traveling with another boy, and I got some very angry letters from my father about the fact that I wasn't going to go to Harvard or wherever I had applied.
What year would that be when you first went
to? That was in 1938, when I was 18 years old. Very nasty letters, and appropriately. And the young man I was with, his father got into some trouble with the law. And I said to him, and he had to stay home in Pittsburgh. So I said to him, where were you going to college? And he said, to Williams. And so it occurred to me that he might have a vacancy at Williams. So I found out who the director of admissions was at Williams. I called him up, and he lived in Dayton. And I went down to Dayton to see him, told him that in 5 days he was going to have a vacancy, and I would like to take the other guy's place.
Wow.
And that's how I got to Williams. I didn't even know where it was.
You don't care to mention the name of the other person?
No.
Okay. How long were you in Europe on that tour?
Oh, it wasn't a tour. We went to the Sorbonne for a month, and then we traveled around Europe for another month.
So that was in the period just before World War II, right?
Right.
Were you aware at that time that there was war brewing?
I certainly was.
And how?
As a matter of fact, we had quite a few fights at the Sorbonne because there was a Dutch Nazi who was picking on another Jewish boy from Czechoslovakia. And we were requested to leave the school and return and get our diploma if we wanted to go travel. Because we were a little disruptive, what we did with this young man. In the meantime, yes, I was very much aware. As a matter of fact, in the next summer, I went to something called CMTC, Civilian Military Training Corps, to Edgewood Arsenal, Fort Hoyle, near Baltimore. Got terrible asthma, and
this was like a voluntary military training?
Right. The next time, after I finished my freshman year in college.
You felt that we were going to eventually have to fight?
Absolutely. And then
wasn't that very perceptive of you? A lot of people, certainly older people, didn't seem to, feel that war was inevitable.
I think we were very much aware that war was inevitable. We
you
had
mean the people as a rule, as a whole, you mean?
No, I think the Jewish community was very much aware of. We had my parents had brought over a young man from Berlin in 1937, put him into Shady Side, where he graduated. His name was Ernst Cohn, and who later on, incidentally, when he got money from the German government for interruption of education, gave the money to Shady Side in honor of my parents. He went on to Pitt. He worked for NASA and has since retired. Lives in Dothan, Alabama. But we were very, very much aware that there was going to be a war and that America was going to be involved in it. After I was very asthmatic at Port Hoyle, my father found out that there was that we were going to train 90,000 Hensons. So I went directly from Port Hoyle, Maryland, to the Navy. And I spent a month on a cruise for the first V-7 course. V-7, which later became V-12. And they gave me a choice when I came back of either taking the 3 months additional training then or to go back to college for a year. My timing wasn't very good on the war, so I went back to college for a year. Then the next summer, when they called me up for my final training, they caught me with asthma and kicked me out. Discharged me.
And that would have been, what, 1939?
The summer of 39.
Did that keep you out of the service then?
After I graduated from Williams in 3 years, I went to Harvard Business School. Really, one of the hopes was that I could get into the Quartermaster Corps, which was at Harvard Business School. I did all the training. Unfortunately, upon graduation, I found out from the major who was in charge that the same set of records were in the Army and Navy War College, and he finally found out that I had been discharged from the Navy. I figured they were so inefficient they never figured that out. So I never served in the military.
And yet you were really an eager beaver
trying to get in.
My
brother went in the Navy a year after I did and stayed in for 6 years.
That would have been like he volunteered and then he re-volunteered.
No, he got a commission in V-12 and served in the Navy for about 6 years.
Was that tough on you being rejected?
Certainly was, but there wasn't much I could do about it. And as a matter of fact, when I got out of Harvard Business School, I took a job in a defense plant in Dravot, right down the river, and doing industrial engineering for about 2 years.
Would that have to do with the war effort?
Well, we were building something called LSTs, originally one a week. And the second year we built one LST a week and one destroyer escort a week on alternate weeks. Unfortunately, they were on a cost plus basis. Dravot went from 7,000 employees in the East Yard to 21,000 employees in the East Yard. So I figured my services were not really needed anymore. I went to work at Kaufman's in 1944, I think.
By 1944, were you married?
Oh, yeah. That was one of the reasons why I came back to Pittsburgh. I had a girl. girlfriend here, and I got married. Her name is Jean Gottlieb.
Mm-hmm. Remember her?
Huh? You remember her.
Uh-huh.
And I guess I already had my first child when I was working at Drew Bow.
And where did you live at that time?
At that time, I lived on... we had an apartment on Walnut Street.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had half a house on, I guess it's Hastings.
Yeah, Jean was a Pittsburgh girl.
Yeah. She went to Carnegie Tech. She was a dramat.
And what year were you married then?
1944, I believe.
And she died 14 years ago, so that...
She died...
I'm trying to think how long we were married.
1980, I think. Mm-hmm. I think we were married 36 years.
Mr. Wolf, you said you went to Kaufman's in 1944, and by then you were married and had a child.
Well, I had a child the next year, let's put it that way.
Okay.
So it must have been 19. I think I had a child. I was married in January of 44.
Okay.
And I think my daughter Tina arrived in May 29th of 45. That's why she's 50 years old.
50 years old, right. When you went to Kaufman's, now your father was running the store.
Yeah.
Your uncle Edgar was there. How did you start?
I started out as Edgar Hirsch's assistant. Edgar Hirsch's assistant.
He was a merchandise man.
Right. In my years at Drabeau, I had worked one evening a week and on Saturdays selling shoes. Shoe department. And if there ever was a disorganized activity, it was selling shoes on a once a week basis.
Was that your choice, or did your family want you to?
No, that's my choice. Mm-hmm. Wanted to learn something about the retail business. And it was very difficult because every style would come in during the week, they'd sell all the hard sizes,
mm-hmm.
and you'd be left with the dregs by the weekend.
And there were all these women sitting there with their bare feet.
That's right. That's right.
So,
as a shoe salesman, I think I was mediocre, very mediocre. As a Shadyside academic salesman, I was good, but as a shoe salesman, very questionable. But I got a job as Edgar Hirsch's assistant to learn something about ladies' ready-to-wear merchandising. And about a year later, a buyer's job opened up in the budget coat department. And I wanted it. Went up to see Edgar Kaufman. And Edgar Kaufman's son, Edgar Jr., had just left the business. So Edgar was a little suspicious. He said, "How do I know that you have the capabilities of being a buyer?" And I said, "Well, I went to Williams, I went to Harvard Business School, I got a degree with a distinction, whatever it was." And he said, "Well, that doesn't make you a good potential for being a buyer." He said, "I have to send you out and have you tested." So he had a fellow by the name of Lawrence Larry Greenberger.
Oh, you remember him.
And he did psychological testing.
Uh-huh.
And he sent me out to a high school that was right below Mercy Hospital. I don't know what that school was. Fifth Avenue High. And they psychologically tested me. And I never did get the results of that test. But I got the job.
I do remember. He was the beginning of all these...
Psychological testing, yeah. Sure.
That's right. And so you must have passed.
Must have passed. No comment.
How were you received among your fellow workers, being the boss's son and that sort of thing?
I think I was well received. I don't really...
Never had problems?
I had problems in talking up. I talked up too much when I later became a merchandise man. But not really. I think they were always very accepting. And I never used my father's... I never went over anybody's head to get him to do things. Even when I had trouble with Oliver about showcases or about displays or anything like that. Oliver was my uncle.
And he... What was his...
He was a store manager or something. I don't know. He's a vice president.
Your brother was also... Well, this was during the war that you're talking about. Yeah. But then your brother also came into the...
He went into the housewares department, I believe. And he left the store before I did.
As a Wolf and as a Kaufman descendant, are you stockholders, or were you stockholders in the business? Did you have,
We had some stock. The main stock was held by Edgar Kaufman and his brother, Oliver Kaufman. My father had some stock from his wife, and also he had some stock options when he ran the business. But we were very minority holders.
You obviously, you went to a lot of trouble. You liked the retail business?
Loved it.
You think it was sort of in your blood?
No, I don't think anything's in your blood. I like the building products business, too. Love it. So I have a great belief that if you love what you're doing, you're going to do much better at it. And I think that's true of my children and my nephews and nieces, everybody. I think if you do what you like, decide to like what you do, you'll do a super job.
It's a great philosophy.
Anyway, I worked for Edgar Hirsch for, 'til about 1953, by that time I merchandised the budget departments. And at the time they were having trouble with the menswear merchandise man. His name was Bert Baugh, and he left us, was asked to leave. And I got that job, merchandising the second floor and men's furnishings on the first floor, which I did until 1963.
I remember Mr. Barish.
Mike Barish.
He was cosmetic.
No, Mike Barish was the children's merchandise man. Lovely man, good merchant, too. Mm-hmm.
When did Kaufman's become a May company?
1946, I believe. Edgar Kaufman sold the business to the May company. Edgar had a dilemma. His son was not interested in the business. My father had always run the business. His brother, Oliver, had always been very faithful to him, had been his sidekick. Mm-hmm. And Edgar, I guess, wanted a perpetuation of the business, but he couldn't make a choice between my father and Oliver at the time. So he sold it to the May Company, who was the second cousin of my dad's, and my dad then ran the business until his death. step.
I've always heard that there's a lot of connection and intermarriage among the big merchants of department stores. There was a book about it one
yeah.
point.
Yeah, Merchant Prince or something.
Yes, and I remember talking.
But that isn't the reason why May Company was chosen. I think that my father had a contact with the May Company to ask them to look at it.
And Mr. Farrell, who's now the head of the May Company, was...
Mr. Farrell, I hired out of Antioch, where he was on that 6 months program. They have some sort of a 6 months work program.
Mm-hmm.
He first, Mr. Joe Miller, my camera buyer, was ill. We put him in the camera department for a couple of months at Christmas. Then we made him a clothing assistant to Kenny Newhausen in the clothing department. Then they took him away to make him a handbag buyer on the first floor. And now